is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
I am going to flash back, Paul Gallant. We're going to flash back to 2015. And the Seattle Seahawks are in the sixth game of the season, and, well, things have not been going extraordinarily well. They're in a nip-and-tuck game, and all of a sudden, the Carolina Panthers are driving down the field at CenturyLink Field. The Seahawks are 2-3, and there is a rather large man who goes running right down the center of the field, and Aaron Levine, anchor of Q13, turns to one Dave Wyman. He says, "Oh, no, Greg Olsen!" Points at him. He then catches the game-winning touchdown as Seattle's defense had forgotten to account for him. That will not happen again, and the reason it won't happen again is because he's going to be catching passes from Seattle rather than against Seattle.
Play clock winding down. They get to play off. Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
Seattle's got to deal with a new tight end, Greg Olsen. 1 year, $7 million. You get a former Pro Bowler, guy who's in his 14th season, and he should be an immediate help.
It's a good move. If you want Russell Wilson to get back to the way that he was playing at the beginning of last season, you got to bring a tight end back into the equation. We don't know if Will Disley's going to be back for the start of the season. He's bouncing back from a torn Achilles. I wish him the best in his recovery, and from the sound of things, it does seem like he is making progress. But you need a guy who's big. You need a guy who can really just challenge the defense in the seams. And Greg Olsen, even though he's going to be 35 this coming season, even though he's got 13 years of play in the NFL, this is a guy who last season, with Kyle Allen and Will Greer as his quarterbacks for 14 of the games this past season for Carolina, he was still productive. 52 catches, 597 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He is as big as Will Disley. In fact, he is an inch taller. And I think that he is going to help Russell Wilson, whose yards per attempt and completion percentage went down when Will Disley was out for the season, perhaps have the same kind of immaculate first five games that he had last season over the course of an entire year.
It's good to start off with a win, right, in the offseason?
Yes.
And I think this is the most important offseason that Seattle will have since the year that they drafted Russell Wilson. I think this is the year. I think there are many questions. I think there's huge opportunities. I think this will be the most important offseason they've had since they drafted Russell Wilson. They start off with a win. It's a little more money than I expected. I'm not wild about the idea of bringing a guy who had missed a chunk of two of the past three seasons with foot injuries. I generally consider foot injuries for bigger guys and back injuries and wrist injuries for hitters like things I don't want to mess with. Like, foot injury guy is tough to count on because it, look, the number one indicator of getting injured again is having that injury before, and feet are really important. I like this deal, though. I like it because of who Greg Olsen is, and I like it, Paul, in part because you tracked down a bunch of sound of him, of what he sounded like as part of it. Was it All or Nothing?
All or Nothing in 2018, right. He was heavily featured that season despite having the injury issues that he had with his foot. In 2017, he had had right foot injury issues, and first game of the season, he re-aggravated it, and later on in the year, after coming back and fighting through it after missing just three games, he aggravated it again.
He had a lot of really funny things to say. He's a really
good
personality. Here is some of what he had to say.
And Wednesday, the Panthers are back after a big, big come-from-behind victory on Sunday. The Panthers are back in a rainy practice facility, but there's nothing that can hold them down. Hashtag, the grind never stops. Hashtag, we never sleep on success. Hashtag, old school versus new school. Hashtag.
Ran out of hashtags.
He did run out of hashtags, or him explaining how his son was somewhat critical.
Can I tell you guys another Tate being really critical of me? So we're driving home after the game, and he's asking like 1,000 questions about why we lost. And he's asking all the questions you don't want to answer.
And you were in a good mood.
I was in a terrible mood. So he goes, so that the first couple times when you didn't score, you ran the ball a lot, and it didn't work, but then they called play action, and you dropped it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you know what? You hold us to a high standard.
That's what he says to me. I said, Tate, you're really hard on me. He goes, you're hard on me. So that's true.
You got to figure it out.
I like Tate. Got to keep him accountable. Look, he's 35 years old, but he's still got to produce for Russ.
I like this move. I like getting a guy that's going to be someone that is a leader in there that has that sort of strong personality. And I think Russ excels with tight ends. I think that we've seen it. Jimmy Graham had 10 touchdown catches from him in a year when they couldn't run it. And some of that was because they couldn't run the ball at all. And some of that is because I think Russ really finds tight ends. I think it's a position. I used to say that you could line up a cadaver. Like you could put Weekend at Bernie on Peyton Manning's team, and that the cadaver would catch 65 passes.
Someone's going to have to hold his hands, though, so he can catch the pass.
That's fine. He lines up at tight end. He's going to catch 65 passes because Peyton Manning's tight end, whether it's Dallas Clark or some of the other stiffs that he threw to over the years, like that guy is going to become an all-pro because that quarterback looks for him. I think Russ has got that similar affection for a quarterback.
Yeah, and look, you saw the change in terms of their red zone success rate. 2016 to 2018, Russell Wilson was one of the best quarterbacks in the red zone. He was targeting tight ends on 33% of passes there, which is second most in the league, and he was number one in terms of yards per attempt and in terms of success rate in the red zone. And then last year, Jacob Hollister, he's your tight end at the end of the season because, I'll be honest, I think the Seahawks somewhat mismanaged their tight end situation going into last season. You can't predict the Will Dissly injury, but they had a lot of faith in Ed Dixon coming back, who had missed all that time in 2018 with the quad injury and had the knee surgery in August, and they trade Nick Vinette, and obviously Luke Wilson had some injury issues. But if you go and you look at what Jacob Hollister was not able to do in the season finale, where he catches a pass at the one-yard line and he just gets walloped and dropped and he doesn't get in, Greg Olsen or Will Dissly is getting into the end zone on that play. And I think that that is a big, big change going forward for this team. And I understand the reservations about bringing in a 35-year-old tight end, especially when you had the issues that you've had with Ed Dixon over the last couple of seasons. But I think this is a guy who's a tough gamer. And assuming that this thing does not re-aggravate itself, which it did not last season, it did in 17, it did in 18, it did not last year. Last year he missed two games due to concussions. I think that this is a guy that really is going to help the Seahawks have a very loaded offense to let Russ cook, as the cooking people say.
The risk here, I think, is that you are putting a $7 million salary. That's a relatively high salary for a free agent. And he's not a free agent. He won't count against your compensatory picks. But to sign a guy to a one-year deal, it's a relatively high salary. It's a risk because you mentioned the injury history. I don't have a problem that they are adding to the offense, though, before they get around to fixing the defense. I think this gives you a jump start on what you're going to have. And I think it allows you to build a little momentum because I think that you're going to have a sales pitch that's going to be made, whether it's about retaining guys and giving them an opportunity to stay here or whether it's about getting guys. I think having someone like Greg Olsen, who has a lot of respect around the league, I think that helps you build some momentum going into a part where you're going to be selling yourself.
100%, Danny. If you're trying to sell yourself, don't you want to have some cool person come into your party? Because when a cool person comes into a party, then everyone wants to come into the party. Guess what? Greg Olson's the cool guy coming in to start things off. He's showing up fashionably early. Guess what? Other people are going to start texting him and be like, hey, what's going on tonight, man? He's going to say, this is the place. It's a huge start. Now, again, we'll see how everything plays out, but you are so right. This is another sign that the Seahawks are really close, and a veteran can see it. He sees Russell Wilson. He sees Pete Carroll. And now it's a matter of, are they going to be able to do another move, and specifically on the defensive side of things, and hopefully bringing in a Greg Olsen helps that.
Would you have been worried if you'd picked Washington? He was like, thanks, guys, but I'm going to stay over here.
I would get it because Ron Rivera's there. And
right.
And I think that there's another guy who used to play for the Carolina Panthers who's now an assistant coach. I'm assuming a lot of old Panther faces would be there so that he would maybe feel very familiar if he were to go in there. That's typically how things work, the good old boy system. But, yes, I mean, you're voluntarily playing for Daniel Snyder. You're voluntarily playing with Selfie Mick. I'm trying to explain to my offensive linemen that they need to trust me on the sidelines and Dwayne Haskins.
What can I do to help you?
Yes, just listen to me, please. Also protect me. Thank you. Look, I think that he made the right decision, but it was an obvious decision. And especially watching the All or Nothing, because they show a lot of time him spending with his family, and he says every single year, you know, We talk with the kids, and they're getting old enough now to actually like be able to say whether or not they want to have me home, or the boys, I guess, want him home, and his daughter, excuse me, the boys want him to keep playing with the daughter. She wants him to come back and be home more. But I think when you look at it, it was between broadcasting and the Seahawks. And ultimately, that the Seahawks were able to keep him in the NFL, I think says something.
Well, and his son Tate has very high standards. So if Pete Carroll ever needs someone to ride on Greg Olsen, you can just turn to Greg Olsen's son to talk to him about the passes that he needs to catch. It is Danny and Gallant. We'll have a lot more about Greg Olsen, what his addition means. But right now, it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Drew Brees is coming back to the New Orleans Saints, so that sort of creates a little bit of stability as we look at as the quarterback turns this offseason. Meanwhile, Tom Brady is apparently going to have teams come and visit him to make their pitches. I don't know if he's going to leave New England the more and more I hear about it.
Yeah, it certainly seems he's never been the person that sets himself up as a diva. Having people come to him to court him seems very strange if he's going to end up leaving New England. It seems less strange if it's sort of fait accompli that he's going back to the Patriots. Come here, make a pitch if you want, but I'm probably headed back here. It would be a really strange look if he made people come to him to try to pry him out of New England. And if the Patriots are going to offer him... Yeah, if the Patriots can offer him $30 million, can he really leave? Like, would you really leave and to make when they're offering that kind of money?
Per Tom Curran, who covers the Patriots, it's not about the money with New England either. Like, they're just sitting back and they don't care. I think that $30 million is a lot to say no to, but I think for Brady, it's, dude, you guys got to give me better weapons than I had last season. You got to give me better than these young receivers that I was just... Honestly, too tired and too old to deal with.
Is he in the Danny Glover Lethal Weapon?
I'm too old for this.
Yeah, too old to be dealing with these knuckleheads.
I think that he feels that he has gotten to a point where he should have guys that know what they're doing right away, that he's not having to physically line up. And that might be a bit of an extreme example. I don't think he was doing that necessarily. But he holds these receivers to a high standard, and when they're a bunch of young guys, it's going to be hard for them.
Let's get Tate Olsen out there, tell him what's what.
Yeah.
What to watch for.
You ever taken a mulligan, Paul?
In golf?
Yeah.
In
life. I'd like to do that one over.
Well, yeah. I mean, you only can really do it in golf, I guess. You can't really do a lot of things over.
You could try it. You can try it as the baseball commissioner. He'd like a mulligan when it comes to talking about the World Series trophy.
You know, I had a long day on Sunday. I think I did 45 minutes on camera, and then I did a press conference.
Oh. Hold on. Oh, that sounds so bad, Rod. I can't believe it. You talked for 45 minutes.
Where's your intestinal fortitude?
Oh,
where
my
is
gosh. It?
It
was a really... Okay, anyway, get back to it.
I have to say I made one mistake.
What?
At least.
Oh, that's funny. At least one. Good one, Rob.
During that long day. And that was in an effort to make a rhetorical point. I referred to the World Series trophy in a disrespectful way. And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it. I will say this. You know, I've awarded 5 World Series trophies. There is no greater pleasure in this job than awarding that trophy. I understand what it means. And again, it was a mistake to say what I said.
Yes, if we can all get together and agree, we all believe that the most significant transgression in this entire thing, the thing that he should feel most bad for, is referring to the trophy as a piece of metal. Because that's really the underlying problem of everything,
yeah,
right, Paul?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, it's a piece of metal that gets easily damaged. People forget this. Those little flags, man, they're easy to bend. He also said he's a little sad about not stepping in to stop this when he knew about it. So that's nice.
Yeah,
might need a mulligan on that one, too. How many mulligans do you get in a round?
I don't think the bar is going to be very high for the idea that we're going to flesh out at 7:45, which is my campaign to become the sports czar of America.
What to watch for.
I am loving this, though I feel bad for the... fine fans of Cincinnati, and there's
all 5 of them.
Yeah, at this point, that's sort of what they've created for themselves. But Joe Burrow is sounding less and less likely to be happy about going to the Cincinnati Bengals, saying, quote, "Look, this is a long process, right? The Bengals have their process that they have to go through. And so I am blessed to be in the position I'm in. If they select me, they select me. I'm going to do everything in my power to be the best football player I can be. But he was very adamant about the fact that he's got leverage in this situation. He's got Jordan Palmer as his quarterback coach and preparing him for the draft. This is a guy who's a brother of Carson Palmer, who obviously forced his way out of Cincinnati. You got all sorts of Bengals that are like, dude, you don't want to go here. I'm curious as to what happens in a month or so.
That is what to watch for. We'll ask the professor what he sees happening with Joe Burrow now as he joins us for the Morning Drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Better than the Cincinnati Bengals, who it sounds like Joe Burrow. I don't know if cold feet's the right description, but he's being increasingly noncommittal about his enthusiasm for being a potential number one selection by Cincinnati.
Yeah, and that was a rumor that circulated about a month ago, and it was mainly coming from his father, because his father really didn't want him to go to the Bengals. And so just like in the case of Archie Manning, I guess, not that Archie always had more clout than Joe Burrow's dad, but that started about a month ago. And of course, he went on radio, his dad did, and said, oh, no, that's not true. He wouldn't mind going to the Bengals and all that stuff. But you can see that there's some resistance right now. Jordan Palmer, as you mentioned, of course, that's Carson Palmer's brother. And Carson, I think, is in his ear telling him, hey, listen, they don't have the commitment that you might want. And it took a lot out of me through the years. And I know Solomon Wolcott came back and also reiterated the same point. So I don't think he does have enough leverage to be able to pull it off, but he might try. And you can see that one way or another, he's not going to be a happy Bengal if he's taken number one.
That's the tricky thing. He doesn't have the leverage. Like, John Elway had the leverage when he refused to be drafted by the Baltimore Colts because he also said he could play baseball. I don't know how many people actually bought into that, but he threatened to play baseball. And we've seen that before. Maybe Joe Burrow needs to say, hey, guys, I'm a great baseball player. Or pick up curling or something like that. I don't know, some other sport to perhaps create that leverage. What can he do to not be drafted by Cincinnati?
Just basically threaten to miss the season and go back into next year's draft. I guess he can do that, but what's he going to do in the meantime? That's why it's going to be pretty much a hollow threat in the sense that the Bengals are a stubborn team and they're going to do what they want to do. And so I don't think they're going to be intimidated by that. It's like if you're going to hold out, you hold out, and then they'll just go with another quarterback. But this is one where you can see that a lot of people were in his ear kind of encouraging and saying, listen, if you go to the Bengals, it may not be a great experience for you, and you may not get the type of wins that you might want.
That issue about the Bengals being stubborn, it can't be undersold, because they are very stubborn. There's one team that doesn't make trades on draft day. The Bengals line up and they make their picks and they take their players. They generally don't sign other teams' free agents. Like, they're the one team that sort of is the outlier in how everybody approaches it. I mean, let alone trading the first overall pick. They just don't make draft day trades.
No, they really don't. And the one thing is that in recent years, they were, and I say now put it in past tense, and pretty good as far as, re-signing their own guys. Yep. They've been pretty good about that, because if you look at homegrown talent and guys getting second contracts, they're really in the top five. And one of the things that they stress, and I know this comes from Duke Tobin, is that, hey, listen, it's like we may not pay you the most money, but we're going to be loyal to you all the way through. And I know Duke told me that guys like TJ Hushmanzadeh and others came back and said, you know what, we probably should have stayed with you as opposed to leaving in free agency. But also, you're not going to get the top dollar. But they've made so many mistakes in the last couple of years that pulled the franchise down. Because remember, they went five straight years to the playoffs with Andy Dalton at quarterback. But then they let, on 1 year, Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones go in free agency. And then the next year, they let their best two offensive linemen, Andrew Whitworth and Kevin Zeitler, go. And so the next thing you know, their offense wasn't any good.
It's certainly going to be a very interesting offseason for them with Burrow, with what happens to Andy Dalton, with what happens to A.J. Green, whether or not they franchise tag him. Now, you look across the NFL. Speaking of wide receivers, I don't know if you've noticed the Stephon Diggs show on social media, John. This is a guy who likes to tweet out cryptic quotes. This is also a guy who, I guess, deleted everything Minnesota Vikings related on his Instagram recently. Do you feel like he is going to be leaving the Minnesota Vikings via a trade?
Yeah, you start to get that idea. I mean, because I don't know what's turned on him. I mean, it started somehow late in the season, but he seems to be on that tirade where he might want to be out of there. I don't think it's a money thing. It might be a money thing because they did give him a pretty good contract. But yeah, you start to get the idea that he could be trade bait. And I think teams are starting to move. Like, for example, some early thoughts are the New England Patriots may try to go for Diggs to try to at least satisfy Tom Brady and get him more receiver help. They made the trade for Mohamed Sanu. So that could be one of the things going on. But I think we're digging into something with Diggs.
It'll be interesting to see. He's got some signs of being a little bit of an erratic personality. The number of times he's screaming on the sidelines. The fact that none of his players wanted him to date their sister.
Danny, I think he might be the biggest diva receiver in the NFL right now.
Which is weird because he never seemed like that before. I don't know. It is interesting. John, we got to get your reaction to the Greg Olsen decision. What do you think about him becoming a Seahawk?
I think it was a great move. I mean, because it just buys insurance now for Will Disley coming back from his Achilles tear and gets a good threat. And it gets it out of the way. I mean, you now check the box. I mean, they don't have to do anything at tight end. They can now, you know, wait to see how long it's going to take for Disley. But in the meantime, you get a guy that had 52 catches last year. I mean, sure, he's had injuries that's knocked him out of he hasn't had a full season since 2016, but it's not like he has to have a full season. Last year, he missed two games with a concussion, but, you know, he had foot problems back in 18 and 17. But I think this is a good move because he still has some good football left in him. He'll work well with Russell Wilson. And no, I think it's a great move.
When you're in league circles and you're talking with other people that cover the league like you, what's the first thing that people say when they talk about Greg Olsen?
With Greg Olsen, I mean, just how smart he is as a player. I mean, I think now they're appreciating he's also a very good broadcaster, which doesn't do anything in the football side of it. But I think that he's a good, very good route runner, you know, one of the smarter guys, but also a guy who really works well with quarterbacks.
That'll be interesting, his relationship, because it certainly looks like Russell likes to feature his tight ends. Mm-hmm. He threw a lot to Jimmy Graham, even though a lot of people were unhappy with the way Jimmy Graham worked out here. Jimmy Graham had caught a lot of passes. Will Disley's gotten off to a great start. I think we're seeing a pretty good sign that this might be a position that Russell excels at finding.
Oh, no question. Yeah, because particularly, you know, knowing that sometimes he has to get rid of the ball quickly because of the problems with the pass blocking. And you can see particularly with Jacob Hollister and what they've done with Disley is that, you know, that's a good quick option. You know, you take a nice, you know, maybe it's not a three-step drop because he's going to be in shotgun, but you get rid of the ball in, you know, less than 2.6 seconds and you get it to the tight end and you hope he can get some yards after the catch.
How do you think this affects Jacob Hollister, who's a free agent right now?
Well, he's not a free agent. He's just a restricted free agent.
Restricted free agent, yes.
Yeah, so he's not going anywhere. It's like, no, he'll still be part of the mix because they'll still use two tight end sets, and it would be just Olsen will be the starter, and Hollister will work his way in. Because remember, I mean, you know, Jacob had to fight through a bunch of injuries, and he was gutsy in being able to do that to play the entire season. I mean, he was hurting in a lot of these games, but I think it just gives a nice balance right now. I mean, you know, obviously, you have to figure in the next couple of days something will probably happen with Ed Dixon because he probably won't be back. They'll clear out some cap room by letting him go, but and I think it's an Olsen Hollister combination. But now what they still need to figure out is getting either George Fant back or who's going to be the blocking tight end.
Professor, we look forward to having you each and every day as this lead up to free agency. The Seahawks start with their first win. They get Greg Olsen, who had been released by the Panthers. Thank you very much, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
Coming up next, I usually don't like a team going older. At a position like this, seems like Greg Olsen might be somebody that you make an exception for. We'll talk about Seattle's addition of the former Pro Bowl tight end next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Greg Olsen's 34 years old. He's going to be 35 soon. He was on the verge of becoming a broadcaster. In fact, for those who have been watching XFL football over the last couple of weeks, you've actually heard Greg Olsen's voice in the booth as a color commentator for those games. So I think for those who are with reservations over this move, Danny, I think it's fair to have them. This is also a guy who in 2017 and in 2018 suffered foot injuries that were all seemingly linked. And even though he was able to tough it out and get back on the field in both cases, ultimately there were two incidents in 17 and two incidents in 18 that ultimately cost him a whole lot of time and kept him to just playing 16 games over those 2 years.
Here he is, and this is from All or Nothing, which followed the Carolina Panthers. Was that 2018?
2018, yes.
And here he is talking about the stretch of injuries that he's had.
You know, in my 12 years, this has been the worst stretch of football that I've ever been a part of. Sometimes when you struggle as a team, everyone starts to look to the future. And the 34-year-old tight end with the broken foot twice sometimes may or may not be in the future. And I know I can play at a high level. I've shown that I can. It's just a matter of I got to get this thing fixed finally after 2 years.
I'm usually worried about foot injury, guy. Like that tends to be something like that's something that can be problematic, especially for a receiver, a running back, a tight end. I like this bet though. I like it as a 1 year contract. I think that he's someone that you know that there's the possibility that it won't pan out and that he is sort of physically cooked. But I also think that, well, you want a guy that's going to be able and willing to show that he can come back from those injuries. And he played 14 games last season and he caught 50 passes in a year where if his heart still wasn't in it, wouldn't he have cashed it in last year? Like, honestly, like Cam Newton didn't play. Like their franchise quarterback, the chances of Carolina actually making a run at a Super Bowl were so small once Newton wasn't there and he played the whole season.
He did.
And that speaks something to me. I like the bet. I like the bet. 1 year, $7 million. I think that this could be something. And it's a situation where he doesn't need to catch 50 passes. I think he might, but he doesn't need to catch 50 passes. If he is an important receiver in the red zone and on third down, that's enough.
Yep.
If he's a role player on this offense, because that is the pivotal part. For this team is extending drives. And if he becomes someone that they turn to on third downs and is a red zone scoring threat, that absolutely will outshadow 100%. The volume of catch.
100%. And here's the thing. Look, the injuries happen, but I have a deep appreciation for guys who try to play through it. And every single one of the last 3 years when he has dealt with an injury, he has tried to bounce back. Think about this in 2017. So he breaks his right foot in week 2. He comes back in week 12, and he re-aggravates it in the first week back. But he's finished out the season, and if you saw him play against the two teams that were the most important games left on the Panthers' docket that season, he had 100-plus receiving yards against the Packers. He had 100-plus receiving yards and a touchdown against the New Orleans Saints in the playoffs. The next season, first game of the year, re-aggravates the foot. Guess how many games he missed? 3. Gets back on the field, and he's able to go from, I think, week 4 or 5 to week 13 where he ruptures his plantar fascia. I don't know how to pronounce that, but
You nailed it. You nailed it, Paul.
Okay, look at that. I'm a learned doctor from a house of learned doctors, and by learned doctors,
it's
I'm just
pronounced
talking about
learned.
My sister. Learned, okay, interesting. So he got back on the field then. And then last year, you mentioned it, Danny. Kyle Allen and Will Greer are your quarterbacks, and you're a 34-year-old veteran. I would totally understand any veteran who's like, all right, yeah, there's no point in me playing. Week 14 and 15, he misses time with a concussion. He plays week 16 and 17. He did not play as many snaps as he probably would have liked to. I think it was only like 57% of the snaps or something like that. Whatever the case, he did not have to play, and he went out there and he played. That's a good teammate, and I like that. Now, there are some who are going to say, but he's being paid $7 million, Paul. Think about it this way.
But he's being paid $7 million, Paul.
Okay, Danny, think about it this way. First off, you're going to cut Ed Dixon. That saves you about $3 million in cap space. So think of Olsen's contract as $4 million, just from that perspective. Second off, you need insurance for Will Dissly. You need insurance. This is the best way to get it. Yeah, you can draft a guy. Yeah, you can maybe just bring somebody else in, and you hope that Russell Wilson turns him into something special the way that Wilson has with Will Dissly, who, let's be honest, you know, coming out of Washington in the fourth round in 2018, this was a guy everyone was looking at as a blocker. All of a sudden, he's developed into a pretty competent receiver. But he's coming back from a torn Achilles. You got to have somebody back there as insurance. Honestly, I'm not even sure that the Seahawks are necessarily done at tight end. I think they feel very happy with what they could potentially have with Hollister having the finish of the year that he did, a very surprising one, and Olsen and Will Dissly. But this is a smart move. maybe you shouldn't expect that much out of it. But again, he produced last season despite playing with bad quarterbacks.
The measurement for what Greg Olsen got will be what Eric Ebron gets in free agency. He's a former high-end pick, and he's someone that went from the Colts to the Giants and is a free agent. I'm going to bet that Eric Ebron, who's significantly younger, is going to get every bit of that $7 million and probably could very possibly more. And if you gave me a heads-up choice between the two, I'm taking Greg Olsen, because I think Eric Ebron is somebody that you're wondering about motor and desire rather than durability. And I absolutely, where you're at as a team for Seattle, you don't need to be betting on the upside for tight ends. You want a guy that you know. I would much rather have someone, hey, the question here is about his durability, and we're going to sign him for a one-year contract, than someone you're like, we like his athletic potential. We know he's kind of been an underachiever. The Colts kind of ripped him right after, right before they traded. Like, all of those different things. I would much rather have the veteran who I have concerns about his longevity sign him to a one-year deal than a longer-term contract to a guy who is younger and a better athlete at this point but isn't the player.
Ebron can't catch. He can't catch. I wouldn't want any part of him. I look at him and I see the horrendous performance that I put on the flag football field last night. I was garbage. I had like 5 drops. It was terrible. One of the worst performances of all time. That's how I feel like you're going to have what you're going to get with Eric Ebron. That's what I feel like you're going to get.
Hold on. This is the weirdest humble brag I've ever heard.
Terrible.
But you're like humble putting yourself down.
No, I'm not.
Down.
No, I'm putting myself down. I mean, I do that glory days thing all the time. Well, when I stink, I have to hold myself accountable. I didn't see
but
the
humble using
brag.
Your own, no, you're here's using your brag. Own performance to rip a pro football player.
Yeah,
like, this is an interesting twist.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, this guy's terrible. He's like me.
Yeah, he's like me. Yeah. And that's, again, that's unfair.
6'4", 245 pounds.
He plays through injuries just like I play through injuries. I mean, you saw what happened to my lip. You saw what's going on with my wrist.
Right, exactly. Like, got a cast on and all that. But look, with Ebron and Olsen, not a comparison. Not a comparison, really. And that's saying something for a guy who's in his mid-30s. Eric Ebron, he's just never been that guy. I know he had that nice year in Indianapolis where he had the fantasy numbers. That's what they were. They were fantasy numbers. He had a lot of touchdowns. Congratulations on that.
I'd like anybody to listen to this clip, and this is also from that All or Nothing, and think that this isn't the kind of guy you want on your team. Greg Olsen is talking to Thomas Davis about music.
This is a good song, Thomas. Does this trigger like a bad moment from your like high school days or something?
Lay your hair if it won't grow. You can fix your nose if you say so. We can buy all the makeup Matt can make. But if you can look inside you, find out who am I to.
Thomas was in a bad place at this time. You're the only one who doesn't like it. This must trigger a bad memory. A girl broke up to you with that song.
The funny thing is, Thomas Davis is who he was talking about. Went up to the speaker and he unplugged it. He unplugged it in that moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he didn't want it on.
I can understand why, because they were going through a losing streak, and maybe he thought that things were getting a little bit too light at practice. But I can appreciate Greg Olsen, because this is a guy who loves to sing. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I also need to clarify something because I screwed up my tight ends.
Yeah,
Evan Engram.
Oh, Evan Engram.
Is the New York Giants tight end. Eric Ebron, so it's my
Ingram's
double
good.
E tight ends. Ingram's, he's okay. He's a first-round pick. Ebron was a high-end pick by the Detroit Lions,
right,
who was most recently with the Indianapolis Colts.
Correct, yes.
So that's where he's coming from as a free agent. I had the right guy in my mind. I just had the wrong reference to the other team. I definitely want Greg Olsen way over Eric Ebron.
Right, yeah, and I heard what you're going with on Eric Ebron. Look, this is a guy that, yeah, you can talk yourself into the first-round potential, or you can look at a guy who for years and years has gutted it out through injury. This is the most, one of the toughest positions you can play in the league. I mean, it's not just that you also are being called upon to be a blocker. You're going over the middle of the field. Guys are going for your legs. Guys are going for your head. And you are just getting beaten the snot out of every single play. And very often, tight ends don't get the same kind of treatment that a wide receiver will. You're like, oh, well, he's big, so we're going to allow a linebacker or a defensive back to get away with a little bit of hand play. this is a guy that I think that you bring in, and he is a very good insurance option for Will Dissly, and also is a guy that's still producing. And really, if you're going to try to say that, oh, it's too much money, like you're going to have to sell me on something different. Because honestly, I can't see the downside to this move. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. He is Danny O'Neill, and I am Paul Gallant. We are about to introduce something to you. It's an idea that can change American sports forever. But is Danny O'Neill fit for the office that he wants to create? We will explain next on 710 ESPN Seattle. Don't go anywhere.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Let go.
Yesterday I came up with, and I guess I can't say I came up with because other people have certainly had this idea, but it's the best idea I've ever had, which may not be a very high bar. But creating a national elected position as a sports czar. And I think Bill Simmons has previously referenced it. I saw Mina Kimes article about it. The czar, and actually I was surprised to see this. There have been czars in American politics.
What?
Since FDR. Like the first czars were back in the 1930s. There were 11 of them. As recently as 2010, there were 38. We might need to come up with a different name for it because the czar is appointed. This would be an elected position. But here's the idea. You elect someone who then has jurisdiction over all sports to change stuff that stinks. That's the entire, because people were saying, oh, we just need another, that's what we need is more government bureaucracy. There's no bureaucracy. Maybe give this guy an assistant, somebody to schedule things, but he just gets to go in and fix stuff. Like go in and say, okay, you know what we're not going to do in the NBA anymore? There's no more offensive fouls. We simply, if you're in position and you draw contact, we won't call a foul. But we're going to improve the game so we eliminate flopping because there's not going to be an advantage to falling on your butt to get a foul called. You can just make the shot more difficult by being in the proper position. These are the ideas that I have, that you could elect someone to fix things.
Okay. A fixer.
Yeah, that's really more what it is someone that comes in and says, okay, you know what? Last year when the Indianapolis Colts stunk because Andrew Luck, or they weren't good. It's not that they stunk, but nobody wanted to watch Jacoby Brissett on primetime. You come in and say, okay, look, we've had a massive change in the schedule here. The Colts are off primetime TV for the foreseeable future.
Wow.
They're not on Monday Night Football anymore. Nobody wants to watch them. It's someone who will act in the best interest of the fans.
So you do this for the NBA this season, too, with the Golden State Warriors. No one wants to watch them this
season. Yes, exactly. Get them out of here. They're off of national TV. NBA is a little different because they don't have the same kind of... But yes, the Golden State Warriors no longer get the prime matchups. Those sort of things to act in the best interest. To look at it, they watch the XFL game and say, oh my gosh, the XFL instant replay review is better than what the NFL has. The NFL's had instant replay since 1986. And in 2 weeks, the XFL has a better... And I'm adamant about it. The XFL's replay system is better than the NFL's.
I do one like guy the transparency.
One guy in an Xbox with a live mic is way better than whatever the NFL's come up with this. We wait for them to come down as they try to split the atom going through, and then they tell us something that none of us really understand, and Al Riveron or whoever the hell it is then after the game explains in tedious fashion something that we all know is impossible.
Do you ironically like the broadcaster referees in the booth that say nothing like John Perry, or that just flub all over themselves like Mike Carey and Jeff Tripp?
That's the other thing. I would kick some of those guys out. Like John Perry? John Perry, you're not allowed to be on national TV anymore.
I sort of like hate listening to him.
Oh, God. He just repeats what's been said. Well, now what they're saying is that there were too many men on the field. Yeah, that's what the official just said after that flag was thrown, John. So here's the idea. I actually think I'm a decent candidate for this. I'm not gonna say that I should be appointed, like I'd have to run for election. I'm not gonna run on the Pinko platform of everybody gets the same amount of money and we're gonna have salary caps. I would be more laissez-faire than that. I'm also not gonna be the blood and guts sort of give me a pound of flesh.
Oh, I like that guy. That's my party.
Yeah, see, I don't think I'd be that guy. Okay. I think I would be more understanding and try to go on the side of effective. Rather than being some big showy, like, you're out of the league forever because I don't like you. I think I'd try to, not compassionate, but I'd try to be ineffective. czar of sports.
Okay. Well, listen, you have some qualifications. Had an MVP vote until Brock Keward made it go away and wrote stuff. Yeah, I like it. Let's get it started.
What problems would you like me to solve?
Okay, Danny, I've got some problems for you. Okay, and there's some serious problems going on in the world of sports. Specifically, the biggest one, Rob Manfred says that he regrets not acting sooner on sign stealing. What do you do about the Rob Manfred situation?
Oh, well, I come in and say Manfred screwed this entirely up. I'm not vacating championships. I agree with him. I think that's a bad way to go down. I'm not going to call the trophy a piece of metal, but I'm going to say that going forward, for the next 2 years, the Houston Astros will not be allowed to sign other teams' free agents. They will have to sit out free agency. They can retain their own, but that's it. They also will serve a punishment in which they have to, if they qualify for, they're banned from the playoffs this year. 2020, they can't make the playoffs. Next year, they only make the playoffs by virtue of winning a one-game play-in to get in against the first team that would be out. So even if they have the best record in the league, they still have a one-game play-in in which their entire season can go down the tubes. So 1 year, no playoffs. They're not eligible for it this year. Next year, they can get it, but they have to play their way into that playoff by beating the in effect, the seventh team, the team that doesn't, or the sixth team, the team that doesn't qualify for the playoffs.
Okay, got it. Okay. Does the sports czar have power to put the commissioner in sports jail?
No, but I can make him come and ask me before he makes any actions, where he has to ask me on national television, do I think it'd be okay if he'd do it? So he gets put in purgatory where, okay, anything you do, you have to run by me first with the entire country watching.
Okay. I've got another one. Noted felon and also former 49ers owner, Eddie DeBartolo has been pardoned. What say you, sports czar? Do you allow this to go down?
Well, he's already, they basically just wiped his record clean, right?
Right.
Like Trump just said, but he's already in the Football Hall of Fame, right?
Yes.
He's already in there.
Take him out. He's a felon.
I'm not going to, cause he got pardoned. What I am going to do is that they have to put a transparent film across his plaque of prison bars.
Okay.
In Canton. So there'll be like, that'll be like a little, instead of a footnote, there's kind of a screen to let you know that, he's previously had trouble with the law.
Okay, I've got one more for you. This one is a tad graphic. This took place in the world of soccer. It's perhaps the most violent act to ever take place in a soccer game, an amateur soccer match in France. I mean, America, because you're the sports star. A player bit another player's during a match. What do you do, punishment-wise?
Did this really happen?
This really happened, and supposedly it was the fault of both. The punishment's handed out.
How is it possible?
I don't know. But the punishment for the guy who was bit, he was suspended for 6 months.
He got suspended for getting bit?
The guy who was suspended, the guy who did it was suspended for 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
What would you do?
I don't want to know more about the details of how this happened. Here's what I would do. The first guy's not suspended. His punishment's enough. The second guy, the guy that did the biting, he's banned for a year. He can't play at all for a year. And
just a year?
No. He's banned for a year if he agrees without pants to walk across a lagoon in Louisiana with alligators.
Ooh.
Like where he's got like on one of those ropes that's suspended, where he's got to sort of ferry himself across. And he can have boxer shorts on, but he's got to, with gators beneath him. And if he's willing to do that, he can come back and play after serving a 1 year suspension. If he's not willing to do that, he's banned for life. He can't come back in. He has to make himself vulnerable to the same type of injury which was inflicted upon him.
I like the idea of you turning this into Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, which is a very underrated television show from Spike back in the day.
Vote for me, Sports Czar. More details coming up soon. It's Danny and Gallant. We got Michael Bumpus, and he's got at least one thing in common with Greg Olson, and it's not height. We'll explain what feet have to do with the future next.